Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and my guest is Nick Davis, the director and producer of Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary chronicling the 1986 New York Mets season. Nick, welcome to Sports Interview.
Well, thank you, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited that I'm part of this documentary. When I went to the city about a year ago, I had no idea if you'd use any of our sound bites, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. I've yet to see it.
Yes, yes, you are very much a part of it. And I know you haven't seen it, but you will, I hope, enjoy not just your participation, but the whole thing. It's a huge epic story of a team and a time and a place, the 1986 Mets, a team like no other.
I think it's, 35 years later, right, since the 1986 New York Mets won the World Series. I can't believe it's been 35 years. 35th anniversary is actually coming up in October. How did you connect to this project? Was it your idea or did ESPN decide to do it and hired you to do it?
No, it was my idea. I think other people have had the idea over the years. It's not a necessarily original idea, but I grew up a Mets fan. This was my team. I like to pretend I remember 1969, but unfortunately I was too young. And so my whole life I was waiting for a team, not just a winning team, but a team that would be amazing and full of larger than life characters and sort of celebrated and crazy. I wasn't entirely sure they would be this crazy. But, you know, when I was a kid, I read the Boys of Summer about the 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers. And that was like my idea. I was like, oh, boy, wouldn't it be great if you had a team that was that interesting and storied and legendary. And sure enough, in the 80s, this team came along. And the way they were constructed piece by piece during the 80s and watching them capture the heart of the city was really something at the time. And so all these years later, I went to ESPN and 3 years ago and I said, why has nobody ever made a multi-part documentary about this great team? And they said, well, there's a lot of good reasons for that, timing and this and that and the other. And I said, let's do it. And it took me a long time to convince them that now was the time and we had the right team to do it. But that's what we've done.
And you got all the players, most of them anyway, Keith Hernandez, Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, Mookie Wilson. And they're at an age where they can look back on the 1986 season and still have great stories and you know, still remember.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think they're at this age now where they're not so concerned. Lenny Dykstra is the other guy, one of the other great characters, Kevin Mitchell, Ray Knight. They are not protecting their reputations anymore. It's like there's been too much water under the bridge. We all know this was a crazy bunch of you know, whatever they were. And so they're willing to talk and willing to tell their stories. And it's honest and open and in some cases, very, very moving.
I love the quote I read in the ESPN release where you said they were a raffish rogues who came together for one great scene, like the characters in a heist movie.
Yes. Yeah.
That's perfect. It is
perfect. And I'm glad you said it's perfect. It came from my wife. I was talking to my wife about this, as I was putting it together and sort of working on the treatment. And I was saying, like, they just came together. Like, it was amazing. She says, it's like a heist movie. You know, it's like you need a cat burglar, Keith Hernandez, and you need a safecracker, you know, Daryl Strawberry. And you need, like, all these pieces. And they were each so full of life and character. Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez, like, how and the way they all fit together to make this puzzle was really something. So I'm glad you like that metaphor. I give my wife, Jane, total credit for it.
Yay. And when you finally met these characters, what did you think? Like when Keith Hernandez came in and you talked with him and Daryl, what were your reactions?
Well, two people made this film, right? There's the Met fan and then there's the filmmaker. And so the Met fan was just beside himself with joy and just so thrilled to meet these guys who had been my heroes back then. And, you know, Daryl, we interviewed during the heart of the pandemic, when at that point, most of the interviews were being conducted remotely. If they weren't people in the New York area, you know, I zoomed in with Lenny Dykstra in California or Kevin Mitchell and would interview them, you know, with a laptop placed next to the camera in, you know, 3,000 miles away. But Daryl Strawberry was in St. Louis, and where he lives in suburban St. Louis with his wife. And I couldn't, as a Met fan, not go meet him. So that was the one airplane ride I took during the pandemic. I think what was pretty clear is very early on in the interview, I dropped the fan and realized, like, I have an incredible character sitting here. I've got to get the most out of this character and the best material I can get for the film so that I can tell the story, not just for Met fans and not just for baseball fans, but for people who just like a great story of these incredible characters who captured that time and place. And so that was what I hope happened.
And did anything really surprise you after interviewing all these characters?
Well, a lot of things surprised me. I think, you know, overall, what surprised me most was just how smart they were about baseball. I think because they had such a wild and crazy reputation, you tend to think of them as just, you know, sort of natural talents or something. But to a man, they talked about how much they, at the time, loved baseball and loved talking baseball with each other. They would stay after the game and really talk baseball and let the Shea Stadium parking lot file out. And the intricacies of strategy and pitching and hitting that they talked about with me in the interview was really something that I wasn't prepared for. And then they just, I mean, so many stories that, you know, are in the film that either haven't been told before or certainly haven't been told on film that hit you in an emotional way. I mean, we all know, you know, a couple of these guys were drug addicts and they admit it. And that's a fact. And yet when they tell their stories, it's really emotional and impactful. And even if you weren't a Met fan at the time or want them to have lost, you know, and aren't rooting for them, it still hits you on an emotional level hearing these guys tell their stories.
Four-part series, Nick Davis. How tough was it to do 4 hours?
To keep it down to 4 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I know how much material, just because you interviewed me for maybe 3 hours. And if you did about, you know, 25 of these interviews, how tough was it to really edit it down to 4 hours?
It was very hard. It was the hardest, most unpleasant part of the job. We had a 6.5 hour rough cut originally. And I, you know, part of me really did think, I think we're done. I think we got it. It's all there, you know. And thankfully, you know, you sleep on it and ESPN says, we're not giving you 6.5 hours. We're giving you 4. And they're actually 3 hours and 20 minutes because it's television hours. So they're each 50 minutes. It was really, really difficult, but I know as a filmmaker, I have always felt like everything is better when it's shorter. You know, it's painful and you lose things that you just can't believe you're losing. You know, you kill your darlings, as Faulkner famously said. But overall, you're trying to tell a single story. And so if one particular story of a crazy event, the night they spent at Sparks Steakhouse, doesn't make it in, what are you going to do? Like, you got another thing that is serving the same function in another way.
And you have an amazing ability to basically relate it to everything that was going on in our country, and particularly in New York, right, in the mid-80s. And here's the Mets coming from, you know, down 2-0 to beat the Red Sox in 7 games. And obviously Bill Buckner's infamous 10th inning error. But it's not just about, you know, the World Series, right, and Game 6. It's really about what was the whole season and what was going on in that time period.
Yeah, and it's even predates that. It really starts in the summer of 77 with the city and the team in the toilet. The city has the blackout. The Mets have just traded Tom Seaver. And it's like, this is never going to happen. And somehow the city comes back, you know, remember in the 70s, Board to City dropped dead, you know. And what's great is we have the story is being told by the people who lived it then. So who tells us about the Ford to City drop dead headline but Ed Lynch, who was a baseball player who was born in Brooklyn. You know, so it's where New Yorkers are telling their story of how the city emerged from the malaise of the late 70s. And then by the mid 80s, the city was sort of strutting and swaggering again. And so were the New York Mets. The New York Mets defined swagger in that era. You know, cocaine was an issue in the 80s in New York City. Nightclubs, all of that stuff, money. And the Mets captured that almost perfectly. Like, you think of other great sports teams, you don't tend to associate them with their time and place quite as much as you do the New York Mets of the New York City. You know, I love the 75 Reds, but I don't think of them and think, oh, Patty, 1975. I just think, well, that was a great collection of ballplayers.
And I didn't realize that Jimmy Kimmel is the executive producer.
Yes. Yes.
How do you know Jimmy?
Well, I know him only through this. It was one of those things. So the first meeting I had with ESPN, I said, come on, let's do this. And they said, you know, no offense, Nick, but you would need the Mets. You would need Major League Baseball. You would need a really good treatment. You would need a really good pitch. And, you know, Nick, you may be a fine filmmaker, but you need an 800-pound gorilla in the room. So I come back a year later. I've got all those other things. I've got Jimmy Kimmel as the executive producer. And the executive at the end of the meeting, he said, no one ever listened to me before. So then we made the deal. Yeah, it was a crazy set of circumstances that led me to Jimmy, and he's a huge Mets fan and has been an incredible executive producer. I mean, so supportive, gives really great notes, really smart. But when we disagree, we go at it, and he'll say, "What's your film?" You know, I'm just giving you my opinion. But when you disagree with Jimmy Kimmel, you better feel really strongly about it. And it's been really great, really helpful, actually.
What a cool collaboration! And what are you most satisfied about now, looking back on all the work you put in, particularly during the pandemic? To get this done, what satisfies you the most about your work?
what an incredible question.
Thank you.
What satisfies me most is that I went to Shea Stadium in August of 1985, and the Mets were in a pennant race, and I think it was right before there was a one-day strike. And I think the Mets were like trying to get, you know, we didn't know it was only going to be a one-day strike. And it was like the Mets had to get to first place before this strike hit. And Gooden was pitching, and Gooden pitched amazingly. And the fans were going crazy. The place was rocking. And I, you know, as a Mets fan growing up in the 70s, I'd never experienced anything like it. And I remember saying to myself, remember this. Remember this. It's not going to happen again. It's never going to feel like this. Please, please, please remember this. And I think what makes me most satisfied is that I have like brought that feeling from young 20-year-old Nick Davis back to life. And I'm now able to share that feeling with people who will be able to watch this.
The film is called Once Upon a Time in Queens, 4 parts to it. It debuts on ESPN September 14th and 15th at 8 p.m. And Nick Davis, what a joy it was to work with you. And I'm completely excited about, I don't even know, you know, how much I'm in this film and what got dropped on that cutting room floor.
There are so many amazing things on the cutting room floor. We really could have done this twice.
You need to do a film just with that material that didn't make it.
Yes. Twice upon a time in Queens.
Thanks so much, and continued success. Can't wait to see it.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.